This podcast is for general information only. It is not intended as a substitute for general healthcare services. If you have medical conditions, you need to see your doctor. Use of this information is at the user's own risk. Welcome to FitRx with Dr. Greg Dennis. Join me as we challenge the standard sick model of healthcare. This is your source for everything health, wellness, prevention, fitness, biohacking, and more. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of FitRx. I am your host, Dr. Greg Dennis. Before we get started, I just want to encourage people to write some reviews on Apple Podcast or whatever for whatever program you're listening to. I just appreciate your reviews. So my next guest is Dr. Stephen Schimpf, and he is a Yale Medical School graduate. And he went on to do his internal medicine residency and then became board certified in internal medicine, as well as medical oncology and infectious disease. He has a number of career accolades, which I'm not going to go through. And then he has also written a number of books, and I will list these in my show notes, but I'll just run through them quickly. The Future of Medicine, Alignment, The Key to Success of the University of Maryland Medical System, The Future of Healthcare Delivery, Fixing the Primary Care Crisis, which is what we're going to talk about today, Fortune Seekers in the Promised Land, Longevity Decoded, which I may have to have him back on here to discuss that book, and then a book called BOOM, B-O-O-M, which stands for Boost Our Own Metabolism. Dr. Schimpf, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
All right. So I kind of found you by finding this book called Fixing the Primary Care Crisis, Reclaiming the Patient-Physician Relationship and Returning Healthcare Decisions to You and Your Doctor. So it looks like you've had a pretty illustrious career in medicine. And so I'm curious, you know, my first question is, what was your motivation in writing this book?
Yeah, so you described my background as one who's sort of a specialist, subspecialist in an academic medical setting. So what am I doing talking about primary care? And the answer to that is, I always thought and still think that primary care is the root of all medicine. It's the most important part. If we don't have good primary care, we don't have good medicine. And it doesn't matter all the specialists in the world, we got to have good primary care. I have a lot of friends who are primary care physicians, and they would tell me about their frustrations, if you will. And in writing an earlier book, which I called The Future of Healthcare Delivery, I had a chapter about primary care in there, but I realized that a chapter didn't get at it. So I spent about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, doing research, talking to a lot of people, and put it all together, and that became this book. It is what I just said. I really do strongly believe that we all need a competent, caring primary care physician who has the time to use that competence and that caring to help us.
Okay. So, you know, my next question, and this is kind of a general question, and you could probably talk the whole hour on this question, but what is the problem with primary care?
Me telling you is, but I'll do it anyway. I see the primary problem, not the root cause, but the primary problem is that docs don't have enough time with each patient. And if you only have 8 to 12 minutes and then you have to scoot them out, you can't really get it. I'm sure, you know, it's enough for something simple. Let me pick something up here. I live in an area where there's a lot of Lyme disease. Somebody comes into the office and has a fever and a rash of the right type and says, you know, I pulled this this tick off my chest right here where this rash is a few days ago. You know it's Lyme disease. You know what to do with it. It doesn't take the whole 12 minutes. Although you should take some time reassuring the patient, remind them to take the drugs for the full 2 weeks and so on. But you can do that in 12 minutes is my point. You can't do that if you have someone who has multiple chronic illnesses, as so many people do today, is on multiple prescription medications plus some non-prescription medications, as so many are today. Maybe in an older person who has some vision, some hearing, some mobility, some cognitive issues. Again, you can't do that in 10 to 12 minutes. And so what happens? And within 12 minutes, you say, I don't have time to figure this one out. Sounds like it's cardiac, I'll make this up. And so, you know, George, let's send you off to the cardiologist and see what the cardiologist says. And of course, the cardiologist, well, I won't do that. We just jacked the cost of medicine up dramatically. We didn't deal with the patient's need. And probably, say for sure, but very probably, that primary care physician or nurse practitioner could have dealt with the problem on their own if they just had the time. Not to assume they also had the inclination and the interest, but you know, I think most do. But most are frustrated. Most are just frustrated that they can't put the time in that they want to put in.
Yeah, and I can speak from personal experience, and I hate to admit this out loud, you know, but you're exactly right. And I just left corporate medicine just 2 months ago. You know, we can talk about this more in a little bit, but you know, with corporate medicine, I'm spinning on the wheel like everybody, and you know, you got 5 to 10 minutes with the patient, and there were many, many times, whether it was a, you know, a skin lesion or something that I knew I could take care of, and I referred them to a specialist just because I didn't have the time. And so, you know, what you said was exactly right, and I hate to admit that, but I mean, I think, you know, all the doctors in that system, most of them are, they're well-meaning, but they don't have the time. So you're exactly right. If they had more time, they could take care of many more things and decrease, you know, the healthcare dollars. So
can I tell you a story about a friend of ours?
Sure, please.
So my wife and I were having lunch with the husband and wife group and a couple, I should say. And in the midst of the conversation, she said, Steve, you know this neurologist? I said, no, I don't know him. But of course, I said, you know, why you ask? And she said, well, because I need to see a neurologist, and I've been referred to this guy for a couple of months. And I thought if you knew him, maybe you could call him and get me an early appointment. So I smiled and said, no, I don't know him. And I'm impressed that you think that I could have gotten you an earlier appointment. But then I said, okay, so now tell me why you need to see him. So here's the story, and I'll try and make it brief. I could make it long. And I think you read it in the beginning of the book. This is actually what got me started on the book. She said, well, I had this sort of strange sensation, started in my upper chest, kind of ran down like a line across my chest into the abdomen. And it was kind of on the surface, and I couldn't make up much of it. But, you know, I'd wake up at night, it kind of would scare me because I'm getting older, and I thought maybe it could be heart disease. And so I went to see the doctor. And the doctor got the same story out of her, and I'll, again, keep it brief. There's nothing more to it than that, apparently. He did an exam and asked questions, of course, that would get at issues like heart disease, lung disease, and so on. And then did an electrocardiogram and then said, you know, I can't find anything. But, you know, the 12 minutes is up now. And this is where this was the fork in the road. He said, I can't find anything. So I know you're worried about your heart. I'm going to send you to the cardiologist. So, of course, she's anxious about that. She's a nurse, by the way. If she goes to see the cardiologist does all the same things, plus a stress test, plus an echo. And you can just see the cash register ringing there. I'm not talking about him getting rich. I'm just talking about, you know, the money that's being spent. And he says, you know, I can't find anything, but you still have the problem. And it does go down into your belly. So let's say you see a gastroenterologist. She's a gastroenterologist. You know what happens. So the gastroenterologist does an endoscopy, my goodness, and does a bunch of tests, and then does a CAT scan. And everything, she comes back to hear what they found. Well, the CAT scan is fine, and all the other tests are fine, excepting that there's a thing about this centimeter in size in your uterus, and it looks like a cyst, but the radiologist, in all due caution, says maybe you should get it checked out by a gynecologist. So she goes to the gynecologist, and of course she's worried now, do I have a tumor in my uterus? The gynecologist says, well, I think it's just a cyst, but just to be sure, why don't we take it out? So it gets taken out and it gets sent to the pathologist, and it takes a while to come back. And it doesn't come back and gets sent off to the academic medical center pathologist. And now she's really getting anxious. And finally it does come back, it's just a cyst, but she still has this strange sensation in her chest. So this announced gynecologist says, well, you know, it sounds like it's a nerve sort of thing. So why don't we send you to the neurologist? She eventually did see the neurologist, who said, every medical student knows that nerves run around the chest between the ribs, not up and down. So it's not, this is not your nerve, but she still had the problem. As it turned out, I was about to meet for breakfast with a very good friend who's a superb primary care physician, and like you, is in a APC type of practice. And I said, listen, Harry, I want to ask you about a patient. Now, I told him this. I didn't tell him the whole story. I told him the beginning of the story. I said, what would you have done? He looked at me and said, I bet you she got $1 million workup. I said, just answer my question. What would you have done? He said, well, if I'd seen her, he said, I would have known her. I would have known about her, about her family. I would know what her blood pressure had been for years, what her cholesterol had been, whether she exercises, you know, whether she eats a good diet, all the other things. He said, and then I would have put that knowledge into the context of what she's talking about here. And he said, I would have done the EKG, of course. And he said, it's all negative. So I would tell her that it's okay. No, I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm convinced that it's nothing that's terribly significant. And she need not worry about it. Of course, if there's any issue, to come back. He said, but I would have done something else. So it's clear she's anxious. And he said, you know, I would wonder about if this is a message, this is her body crying out, her mind crying out for some help. And he said, so I would have her back when I could spend another 45 minutes with her and talk to her about what's going on in the family, what's going on, you know, at home or business and, you know, whatever. And the light bulb flashed for me because I knew the answer right away. And it turns out that in this particular family, this particular woman had a grown son who was now a drug abuser. And she was mortified by that and very concerned that maybe it was because she hadn't been a good mother, that that's why he got into drug abuse. So, you know, it was very deep. But you don't find that out in 12 minutes. Yep. Meanwhile, all the stuff she had done, $16,000, none of it necessary.
Yeah, I would have guessed it to be more expensive than that. So, yeah, and that's a great story, because as you're sitting there telling that story, I'm thinking, again, very recently I was in corporate medicine, and I'm sitting here thinking that happens all the time. I mean, that's a great story to, you know, just to depict what's going on. But man, that happens all the time for various symptoms. And you're right, they get passed around and passed around. And on top of that, when they go in to see the cardiologist isn't going to find anything. And they're going to say, the cardiologist is going to say, well, come back in a year, you know, we'll check you out. And then they go to the gastroenterologist, and the gastroenterologist says, well, it's not GI, but come back in a year, we'll, you know, check everything out again. And so now all of a sudden, I just had this conversation with the patient the other day. And again, I had the time to have this conversation, but they're seeing 3 to 4 specialists and they don't know why they're seeing them, and they're not doing anything. And I said, and this is not to demean any of the specialists, they didn't need them. And I said, look, just quit seeing them. And you know, the patient was like, oh, I can do that. And I said, yeah, you don't need them. And so not only, you know, did they get this $1 million workup, but then now they're going to all these specialists once a year, and it becomes a mess. So that being said, you know, so we have all these well-meaning physicians out there that are caught, you know, in this most of the time corporate medicine, and they have to see, you know, all these number of people, because that's how we get paid, is to see numbers. But how did we get into this mess? How did it come to this?
Well, it's what you just said. We have to get paid. And if you go back in time, primary care was not paid for by insurance. It was paid for out of pocket. Insurance was for the catastrophic, you know, the expensive stuff, maybe surgery or whatever. And then over time, for various reasons, there was a push to get everything paid for by insurance. And so we've gone, including primary care, so we've gone from the high-end stuff, if you will, to prepaid healthcare to the insurance company, whether that's, you know, Blue Cross or Medicare or whatever. Well, the insurers say, this is costing us a ton of money. We have to do something about this. So besides for the stuff we all hear about, such as pre-authorizations and things like that, they hold down the price, the cost of the payments for primary care. And so if you're not yet, and meanwhile, overheads are going up, because you as a doc have to get these pre-authorizations. You have to, you know, have somebody in the office who understands how to bill all these different agencies. They all have a different system. Electronic medical record, which probably slows you down more than speeds you up, even though it should be a big help. Anyway, for all those reasons, you're busier and your costs have gone up. And the only way to deal with that is to see more patients. The old thing about, you know, make it up in volume. So to make it up in volume, you see more patients, you know, 24, 30 patients a day. And if you just take an 8-hour day and say 24 patients, that's 3 an hour. And we've just talked about that before. So how do you do that though? Well, one, you can stay up later, I guess. But the other thing is to say, well, I'm not gonna go see the patients in the hospital anymore like I always did. I'm not gonna go to the ER when I have a patient in the ER like I always did. And I will try, and so that gives me some more time to see patients in the office. And so, you know, you kind of eke it out a ways and of course cut the time down. So a combination of things, see a lot of patients because that's the only way to bring in enough dollars to pay the bills and have a reasonable income. Primary care docs don't make a huge income, probably about half as much, if that, of a specialist. So it's not like they're trying to get rich by seeing 24 patients. It's a matter of, you know, eking out a decent living for sure, but also paying all the bills.
So you talk about the paradox in healthcare. You know, define what you mean by that.
Well, we've just seen a part of it just in the last year. You know, this is incredible development, innovation of vaccines, for coronavirus, and how that got developed and then tested, manufactured, approved, and maybe not out to the public as fast as it should be, but it's an incredible story. And that's so true of so much in medicine, of things that have been discovered, tested, brought to market, and are there to help people. And you know, we all know things like insulin, penicillin, various drugs, and so on. That's the very positive side. New technologies, new diagnostics, MRIs, CAT scans, ultrasounds, and so on. But then we have the other side, and that's the delivery of healthcare. And I will just say that, in my opinion, the delivery of healthcare stinks. That's just where it is today. And it's not just primary care, but as I said earlier, I'd certainly start with primary care.
Yeah. So go into that a little bit further. You say that you know, kind of our delivery of healthcare stinks right now. I mean, what do you mean by that?
Frequently, something gets figured out, but it takes years before physicians know about it, hear about it, and can use it. We have the problems of the doctor may say, "I want to get an MRI in this patient because I am convinced that an MRI there is. I'm convinced there's something there," and the insurance company says, "No, you don't have anything objective to justify that." And again, an example. Physician I happen to go to was told by the insurance company, "No, we're not going to pay for it." Well, he persisted because he was sure, because he had spent a lot of time talking to this patient, there was something wrong. It was subtle, but he was convinced. So he pushed until he got to the medical director of the insurance company, who probably just out of frustration, "Oh, okay, I get it. But I'm telling you, don't try this trick with me again." So of course it turned out that the patient had a lymphoma. It was treatable, curable, but it wouldn't have been if he hadn't pressed and gotten that MRI. So that's the sort of thing that I say our systems are screwed up enough that people aren't getting the care they could get, should get, and frankly deserve, even though they're paying for it.
And I would say too, and I think you talked about this a little bit in your book, and this goes back to the time thing, but we're not focused enough on prevention. We're focused on treating diseases. And honestly, that's how we're trained. Oh, your blood sugar's high. Well, here's a pill. Oh, your blood sugar's still high. Well, here's another pill. Versus taking the time for, you know, talk about lifestyle modification and maybe getting off medications. And that's honestly why I left and am doing what I'm doing, is because I'm very into wellness, as people know who listen to this podcast. And so I didn't really have the time to put into that and make those kind of changes in seeing, you know, 5 minutes at a time with patients. And so in that situation, and so it goes back to the time thing. And then also, you know, being more physicians, I believe that they just need to be more preventative rather than, you know, kind of reactive, which I think we just all seem to be.
Sure. And also you don't get paid. You don't get paid time for prevention and wellness. That's
very, very true. Yeah.
The system is set up to take care of disease and pestilence, if you will. And it's understandable because it goes back again to why insurance was set up in the first place. Back to the primary, my sort of analogy here is not perfect, but it's your car insurance. If you have a brand new car, you probably get a pretty high collision insurance because it's brand new. Of course, you'll pay for that. But if it's an older car, you say, well, you know what, I'll self-insure for some of that, and I will take a much higher deductible because, I'll just take my chances. I'll pay for it. I'm a careful driver, whatever. But we don't have that system in medicine in the sense that, let me back up. My wife and I, we both pay for our primary care out of pocket. And we're delighted that we do because we know we're getting such better care than we were before. And, we wouldn't give that up for anything if we could possibly help it. We don't want the 10-minute approach. Both of us are pretty healthy. But what we found is that when we do have a problem, pick up the phone or text, and we get a response within a few minutes. And it's very persistent and very predictable that we'll get that kind of response. And it's a good response. It's not just, I'll take an aspirin and go to call me tomorrow. It is, let's talk about it. And if necessary, see you right away or, whatever. And another thing, I'll just use again from my own experience, I get intermittent atrial fibrillation. And it was coming more frequent a couple of years ago. So I went in to see the doc. And he said, it is more frequent than it's been, and I'm pretty comfortable taking it on my own. He said, but, I think let's just have you see the cardiologist. I said, okay. I'd seen him a number of years before. And so while I was there, he picked up the phone, called the cardiologist and said, listen, I got a patient in the office. And this is what the problem is. This is what I'd like you to look at. And can you give him an early appointment? I got the early appointment. Now, if I called the cardiologist, And saying I'm Dr. Schimpf wouldn't have made a bit of difference to the registration person, to the clerk outside. She would have looked at her calendar and she would have said, he doesn't have anything available for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever. But he does. He knows he's going to get called by primary care doc, and that's his bread and butter. So he's going to find time when he gets called. Did I really need to be seen that quickly? Maybe not in a couple of days, but. The point is, because my physician called the specialist, I got seen quickly.
Yeah. Well, do you mind me asking, are you in a direct primary care physician?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So it warmed my heart when I saw that in your book. We can talk about that a little bit more, that you mentioned it, as a possible solution. And just because, many people know that's what I do with is direct primary care now, but there's just so many people, and even in the medical field, even doctors just don't know what that is. And so as I was reading your book, and then I came across, where you mentioned direct primary care, I was like, yes. yeah. And it's, I tell people, to kind of piggyback your story, in direct primary care, that's kind of what we do is we work on the patient's behalf. Whether we're calling other specialists, whether we're calling to get the cheapest price on an MRI, or we're calling to get the cheapest price on a medication or whatever, we're now a advocate of the patient. We have time to do that. I mean, and whereas before I didn't have time to do that, but now I am working on the patient's behalf, which kind of goes along with that story you were just telling. So
yeah, so Greg, I was looking at your website and I noticed that a couple of things, which I think, the average primary care physician does not have, and that is you have generic medications available to your patients on site, I believe.
Yes.
And you also have, I guess, contracts or arrangements or agreements with local radiologists and laboratories to get discounted tests.
Yes, yes. That is correct. I was actually, I have this conversation almost daily, but part of the advantage of direct primary care, this is what I tell patients, is you take all the middle people out. And so when you take all the middle people out, it's amazing what you can get tests for. And so we get for labs, it's usually about an 80% discount. And so the same labs, and this is no joke, and people have probably heard me say this before, but the same labs that I would order at my previous job in corporate medicine would be billed about $600. And I can get those same labs for about $24 cash price. So it's crazy. I mean, I tell people that and they're like, what, really? And I'm like, yeah, it's nuts. And so the same way with an MRI, you know, a CT scan, medicines. And so, yeah, we keep some medications. Now, we don't have everything, obviously, but we keep basic medications in the office. I don't know if your doctor does that or not, but we're not pharmacists. And so we don't make money on medications. And so that's just kind of a perk to the patient is that, you know, we'll give medication if we have it. So say, for instance, you come in and you have strep throat, we have amoxicillin. Well, we're going to dispense that amoxicillin to you at whatever cost we got that amoxicillin for, which is usually, again, and I'm not exaggerating here, it's probably about $1.50 for a, you know, 10-day prescription of amoxicillin. Now, not obviously not everything's going to be that cheap, but yeah, so just another advantage of what we can do in a direct primary care setting.
Think about that in terms of someone who has a high deductible insurance policy. You know, people have these insurance policies now that are, you know, like $5,000 deductible.
Yep.
So their insurance is not paying for it. This person's paying out of their own pocket. So if you can say, hey, for $24, I can get you these lab tests, not for $600, which you would have had to pay for otherwise.
Yep.
That's a huge, huge savings. And it also probably more than covers months and months, if not the better part of a year, of your fees, you know, the savings right there.
Yep, no doubt. Yeah, and that's what we recommend, you know, because we never recommend people go without insurance. You know, most people need a catastrophic. And so as far as the direct primary care plan, that's now we have all kinds, but that's what works best. If somebody has a high deductible plan, then they, you know, they're paying us a monthly fee for the primary care, their urgent care, but then they have that catastrophic type plan. So they complement, you know, each other very well. So on that note, let's move into, you know, we kind of talked about you know, the problems with primary care and kind of jumped over talking about direct primary care. But so let's talk about what do we do to fix this? What are the solutions?
If you wait for government, we're going to wait a long time. Government's focus on getting everybody an insurance card, and that's good. I'm not criticizing that. But it doesn't solve the problem of now that you got your card in the pocket, who's going to take care of you? And so got to deal with that. It's going to have to be the patient and the doctor. You're going to have to make the decisions. Patient has to start saying, I want a different level of care. And the doctor has to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to take a chance. And I know it's a chance here, a risk. And I'm going to switch my practice parameters. You know, that's where it's going to have to be. Someone, I used an example in that book of an octopus. And an octopus down deep in the water, when it settles somewhere on a coral rock or something, it can change its colors to kind of match what's there. It's not, and each part, each of its various tentacles can go out there and change its own colors in different areas. So it's not being directed by a central brain, if you will. Each area, each part of that octopus can inherently change its colors to suit its needs. And it's doing this to protect itself, to camouflage itself. If you tried to have a central brain in that octopus that said, we're going to turn pink over there, and blue over there, and green over there, or whatever, that wouldn't work. And one of the problems in medicine, and you just said, let's get right to the problem, but one of the problems in medicine is that government wants to tell us from a centralized location, centralized way, how we should organize, develop, and practice medicine. That's not going to work. It needs to start with people like yourself and your wife who say, this is the way we should be practicing medicine. And I know this is better care, and so I'm going to do it this way. I mentioned a doc, this friend of mine that I was one that I asked about a question about, he did the same thing. The woman who is his partner and my wife's physician told me after the switch, I asked her, you know, what's why? She said, you know, finally, I'm the doctor I always knew I wanted to be. Until now, it was just, you know, I was doing a good job. I was doing the best I could. I was tired. Wasn't paying attention to my family. Now I know I'm doing really good care. And I go home at night, I feel really good. Like now I can spend time with my family because I actually feel good about coming home.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot in doctors who have done this, what I'm doing in you know, in this space, my wife being one of them. I've only been doing this a couple of months, but she's been doing it almost 2 years. And I've heard her say a lot that she really feels like she's doing the best work of her career, you know, and it makes sense. You know, we have the time to do that. So other than things like direct primary care, which I obviously think is a great solution and the one that I chose, but I mean, what else, what other solutions are out there? I mean, what can primary care doctors do who are just stuck in the wheel?
Well, I've seen a couple of different things, which I'm intrigued by. One, I live in a retirement community and 2,000 people, and we have our own in-house medical clinic, four physicians, two nurse practitioners, and some others, mental health, social worker, and so on. But what they did by making use of the Medicare Advantage plan, they looked at the organizers of it and said, we could save a lot of money if we get a good primary care. We're going to do it as an experiment, but we're pretty sure we're right. So they set it up so that the docs in the clinic have minimum of half an hour per patient encounter. And you can get an appointment usually the same day, certainly the next day. You don't have all the bells and whistles you were talking about before, but they've got a lot of them. There's a blood drawing there, and they've got various arrangements for different places. And the point of it is that the Medicare Advantage plan has allowed them to shift the dollars to primary care. And what they have found is that more than pays, more than offsets the money that they would have had to spend on specialty care, ER visits, and hospitalizations. And they've been able again to show that patients who get better care, get better health, more wellness, and the total expenses are less. Well, that's one example. And I think it's a pretty good one. Now, of course, not everybody's in Medicare Advantage plan, but for those that are, if whoever's organizing that Medicare Advantage plan wants to make use of it, they can do that. Now, what about Medicaid? Gotten to know a program in Baltimore. I'm blanking on the name. I think it's Total Care. And they basically take care of Medicaid patients. And they've got an agreement with Medicaid, or the carrier that covers, that takes care of Medicaid in our state, that they will take the individuals who had the most expenditures last year, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. These are all people who have multiple chronic illnesses, HIV, bad asthma, bad chronic lung disease, bad heart failure, bad diabetes. And what they've done is they put together this clinic, which is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Every patient gets 45 minutes minimum. They see a doctor, nurse, or a nurse practitioner, a nurse. They have on staff a psychiatrist and a mental health worker. They have an infusion room. They can do simple x-rays there, so on. Guess what happens? First of all, the patients have said, I've never had care like this before. I've always been sitting in some hard bench clinic somewhere. Now I'm being seen in a really nice area by people who seem to really care about me. And they're getting much better care. Their health is much better. And they have chronic illness. They're not going to cure those chronic illnesses, but they're getting much better care. Hospitalizations are down, ER visits are down. And so the cost to Medicaid come way down, dramatically down. So the point is, it can be done. Good primary care can make a huge impact.
So, you know, I struggle when I talk to people about what I do, and you know, they're like, well, "What do you mean you don't take insurance?" And then they're automatically will dismiss this type of service because we don't take insurance. And so, I tell people that they're stuck in the insurance mindset, and that's just been a hard hurdle for us to get over. And you said something in your book that I wrote down that I thought was good, that insurance should be insurance, not prepaid medical care. And so how do we get people out of that, what I refer to as the insurance mindset?
It's hard. It's hard because, you know, we've come to expect that our insurance is going to pay these bills. But then if we stop and think about it, or if someone else helps us think about it, we realize that this is a mess. Because I go to the primary care doctor, and I have to wait in the waiting room. I finally get in, and of course, they collect my insurance cards on the way in. And then I see the doctor for 10 minutes and I'm put back out. And now I have to see the checkout person who wants to be sure to pay my copays and so on. And then I go on my way. And I don't feel like I've gotten what I needed. So patients have to decide that, gee, there must be something better out there. And docs have to say, I got it for you. I can do better. Come take a look at this. And then, of course, it needs to get in the newspaper, magazines, and so on. That, hey, there's another way to do this that works, and it works better.
Yeah. You mentioned, I just wrote down some stuff that I thought was really good, that you said patients need to take ownership of their health, which I couldn't agree with more. And I've mentioned that on several occasions. And you also say that only when we are directly responsible for paying for our own healthcare will we be truly accountable. And I just think that's so true. Anything else you want to add to that?
No, I think you really got to it. In a sense, the doctor is sort of a bystander in the. The average person and the doctor, normally you're a client of the professional who's giving you advice. So there's a lawyer or an accountant, and it should be the same for a doctor. That's not the way it works right now. And actually, the doctor is sort of a bystander in the process. The doctor gets paid, I'm the bystander. The doctor gets paid by the insurance company. So the doctor has to do what the insurance company wants. And I got to pay the insurance company if I'm the one who pays. And so it's not a typical client-customer arrangement. It needs to be.
So as we kind of start wrapping up here, give us... we may have already talked about everything, but anything we missed, just what's kind of your basic message that you want listeners to kind of take away from this?
Just the basic message is you deserve good healthcare. We all deserve good healthcare. And good healthcare does not need to be expensive. Good healthcare depends upon having a really committed, caring, competent primary care physician who can offer you the time to give you that good care. And they can only do that if you get away from the insurance model, pay for primary care out of pocket. But paying for out of pocket may sound like a new expense, but in fact, it can be a big savings. And more importantly, much more importantly, is that you're gonna feel a lot, your health and wellness, not just disease, but your health and wellness will improve because you're going to be healthier. You're going to feel better. You're going to feel a lot better about your interactions with your healthcare provider. And by the way, your provider will feel better too. But just from your own personal perspective, you're going to be in a much better situation. You're likely to end up having many less prescriptions, many less visits to specialists, many less visits to the ER, and probably less trips to the hospital. I think that's a good bargain.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious, and I know you're kind of semi-retired now, but since you've written this book, what kind of feedback have you got from like your colleagues, other physicians?
It's mixed. Those who have already made the switch, like yourself, say, oh yeah, this is right. This is the way it should be. And then there are those who say, well, I'm 60. I'm not going to do it now. I'm not going to make the switch. I'm going to just hang on and then retire. But those that are 40 are saying, you know what? I didn't know I got into I didn't know it was going to be like this. I should have, but they don't. And I'm going to switch. And I'm seeing more and more people start to switch. It's not going gangbusters for sure, but it's happening. It's happening.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened with me. I'm in my 40s, and I worked with some older doctors who are unhappy with the system, but I know that they just feel kind of trapped because they're later in their career, and they're like, yeah, it's just too late for me to do anything. And I didn't want to be like that. I didn't want to wait another 15 years and say, I should have done it then. So as hard as it was, just from a financial perspective, I felt like now was the time to do it, you know, and I just didn't want to be one of those guys who just, again, was stuck in the system and not happy with it, but say, yeah, it's too late to do anything now. Well, very good. Well, as we wrap up, I always ask my guest if they could give us one health tip that could make us healthier today. And you have written a book on about longevity, so I'm sure you've got plenty, but give us one health tip that can just make us healthier today.
Well, we've all been living through a pandemic for the last year. And that means for a lot of people, not eating as well, not exercising as well, being more chronically stressed, but also one more thing, not getting enough sleep. And so I think my one suggestion right now is work on getting some sleep, because so many of us are not getting adequate sleep. And it's really essential for our bodies to get the sleep we need. And that should be, for most people, around 7.5 hours of real sleep per night.
Very good. Yeah, great advice. So, okay. Well, Dr. Stephen, always have a problem. Schimpf. Always have a problem with the last name, but Schimpf. So to get a hold of you.
MegaMedicalTrends, all one word, of course, .com. MegaMedicalTrends.com. And of course, my books are on Amazon. So if you can remember, you won't remember how to spell my name, but you can maybe remember Fixing the Primary Care Crisis if you go to Amazon, and you'll find that in my other books there.
Yeah, and I'll put that on the show notes and everything. So, all right. Well, very, very well done book. So thank you for writing it and just bringing awareness to this issue. I think a lot of primary care doctors could get, you know, especially could get a lot out of reading that book, and well, just anybody really. But so anyways, yeah, well, we appreciate your time, and appreciate all you guys listening, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to FitRx. I invite you to share this with friends and family. If you would like, you can check out our website at vibrantlifedc.com, or you can email me at drgreg@vibrantlifedc.com.